Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a little bit snarky about all things books. This is a new podcast, so if you like it, I'd really love your support. Please spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, and rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I've got a full-length episode for you today, and my guest is Sarah Hildreth, also known on Instagram as @fictionmatters. In addition to her vibrant Bookstagram presence, Sarah teaches English at an all-girls high school in Colorado. She's taught American Lit, British Lit, African American Lit, Shakespeare, Women in Literature, and AP Language and Composition. Sarah also has her MA in Literature from Georgetown University, which is when she started sharing her reading on Instagram. Y'all, she's a legit reader with a degree and everything, and that is something that I don't have. So I'm thrilled to talk to Sarah today. Back in July, Sarah contacted me about participating in a series she was doing to coincide with the launch of her new blog, which is called fictionmattersbooks.com. Go check it out. And the series is called How to Make a Reader. The series focuses on inspiring teachers to make content choices that will help students learn more about themselves as readers and encourage lifelong reading. And I have thoughts on this topic from a student's perspective. So this prompted an email exchange between Sarah and myself, and I thought it would make a really interesting podcast episode. So here we are. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
And this is the first other Sarah I've had on the show before.
No way. It's such a common name.
I know. And there's going to be another one coming up soon. So you'll only hold that title for a short time.
Well, I'm proud to have it now.
So I'm one of those people who did not fall in love with reading through the classroom. Rather, I fell in love with reading outside of the classroom. So your focus on assigning books that your students will actually enjoy reading really appealed to me. Can you tell me a little bit about how you came to feel so passionately about that particular part of teaching English?
Yes, absolutely. So it was actually when I was getting my master's that the Common Core curricular standards were coming out. And those required a greater focus for English teachers on teaching nonfiction, which is where Fiction Matters, the Instagram account, and whole idea came from.
Oh, interesting. Is that like a way to speak out that you're against the Common Core focus on nonfiction or?
Well, I mean, as a teacher at a private school, I don't really have to deal much with the Common Core. So I'm not necessarily against the greater focus on nonfiction. I just wanted to kind of explore the benefits that could only come from reading fiction. I just think that there's maybe a difference in what you get from reading fiction versus nonfiction.
Definitely.
Yes, absolutely. And so I started actually another series of interviews for my master's capstone project, where I talked to people who weren't English majors about what they had learned from reading fiction, whether that was inside the classroom or out of the classroom. And a lot of people focused on learning about other perspectives or gaining empathy or using their imagination. And so I kind of focused on that for my own research as part of this project. So that's where it all initially started. And then looking forward, it was really Bookstagram that made me think about how I could get my students to enjoy reading outside of school.
How did Bookstagram get you thinking in that direction? I love that was the catalyst, obviously.
I know. Good things can come from social media too, I guess. So it was because there are all of these readers on Bookstagram who didn't necessarily major in English, who weren't teaching English, who maybe hadn't gotten graduate degrees in English, and they loved reading just as much as I did. And I never thought of teaching high school English as trying to get my students to go on to major in English, but I would like them to continue to read after. And seeing all of these really avid readers in all walks of life, doing all kinds of careers, really made me think about how I could get my students to enjoy reading and understand reading as a way they could continue to learn as they leave school, but also just a pleasurable activity.
Do you feel like
that's common among your fellow English teachers, or are you sort of in the minority for focusing so much on that part of it?
I think that the desire is very common, but I think that with all of the other pressures that teachers are under, it's not necessarily brought into the classroom as much as most teachers would like.
Understandable. So what is your process for coming up with your curriculum, and how much say you are in a private school? So let's make clear that you probably have more say than someone that's teaching in a public school. But how much say do you have in the books that show up on your syllabus every year?
I have quite a bit of say at my school. The only major limiting factor is I have to teach the same books as the other teachers who teach the same classes as I do. So for example, in American literature, all of those students should be reading primarily the same books. Often we'll leave room for a unit that we kind of call like the teacher choice unit, where we can bring in something that we are particularly passionate about, even if the other teachers in that class don't want to necessarily do that book. So it's kind of a slow process of change from when I started at the school till now. It's kind of like one book a year I push into the curriculum, and then the next year I try to push another one.
And do you have to meet with all the teachers and you all sit down and come to an agreement? Is that how it gets put together?
Yes, exactly. We have meetings. We throw out book ideas. A lot of people have kind of non-negotiables, things that they really don't want to see taken out of the curriculum or swapped out.
And are there any concrete initiatives you're doing in your classroom to further students' love of reading in general that maybe aren't being done in lots of other classrooms? Or is this just sort of a general feeling you try to impart to your students?
It's both. I do think that having a teacher who is just really excited about reading and gets excited about everything my students are reading, I think that is very important.
Do they know about your Bookstagram presence?
Some of them do. Yeah. So students I've had for a couple of years, this year I teach sophomores and I teach seniors. My seniors definitely all know and they love to talk about it. I usually let them find out on their own. So at some point, I'm sure one of the sophomores will come across it and then will tell all of her peers.
So it's not like on the first day of class, you say, hey, I'm on Instagram at Fiction Matters and I have a lot of followers.
No, I am still a little bit embarrassed about my Instagram.
Oh, don't be. I love it.
Thank you. But I do think that helps a lot. Actually, once they find out, like they see how much I read and how passionate I am about reading. And then the best thing that happens from that is they'll come to me before winter break or spring break or summer, and they'll say, Miss Hildreth, I have time to read finally. Can you recommend some books to me? And that is like the best thing that ever happens at school.
Oh, that's awesome. What is your go-to recommendation for somebody that would come to you? Or do you try to get more personal about it and ask about their reading taste? Or do you have sort of some go-to books that you tell them to read?
I try to get more personal, especially if I've had the student for quite a bit of time. I kind of know which school books at least they liked and don't like. So I teach In Cold Blood. That's always really popular.
Ah, I love that one.
Yes, it's so good. It's so fun to teach.
For my listeners out there, I wrote my junior year high school term paper on In Cold Blood, and it was a very strange selection at the time.
I love that. Yeah, so I'll try to have some true crime books ready to go. A lot of them like historical fiction. I've recommended Kristen Hanna a lot. They tend to love that. So I try to personalize it a little bit.
That's wonderful. I can't remember asking my English teachers for book recommendations to read outside of class. I don't know why. It never occurred to me to do that. And I think that's wonderful that you've made it known that you'll do that for them and that they trust your judgment and think you're cool enough, if you will, to take your recommendations.
I know. It's pretty crazy. I think a big part of that is them seeing that I don't just read classics. I think that's probably why I didn't ask my high school teachers for recommendations either, was I assumed, as many of us do, that they didn't have these full lives outside of school. And they sleep in the classroom and they just read Mark Twain and that's that. But yeah, I think having the Instagram presence helps.
Well, that perfectly brings me to my next question. What is the general breakdown for you of classics versus contemporary books that you teach?
So I took a look at all of the books we teach in our core classes at my school, and the breakdown was about 70% classics, 30% contemporary.
Well, that's 30% more contemporary than my English classes ever had.
Yes, I was pretty impressed with that. And there are some caveats to that. I think pretty much all of us give contemporary literature as their summer reading. So we still do summer reading. Most of us do book lists. We give choices, and most of those choices are contemporary. On the other hand, pretty much all of the poetry or short stories we do is classic. So I think the breakdown probably holds at about 70-30.
Do you like that number, or would you like to see it change?
I'd like to see it change.
What do you think the breakdown should be?
I think at least 50-50. I think people hear contemporary and they think that maybe it's not as literary, or you can't delve into the symbolism, and
it's not as intellectual.
Exactly. But I really think we can teach the same skills with contemporary literature as we do with classic.
And how do your students feel about this breakdown? Did they really gravitate towards the newer books, or did they do find that they love classics? I know this, I'm massively generalizing right now.
Well, there's a mix of both. And actually, this year, one of the things I've been doing with my sophomores is I've started the year by having individual reading conferences with all of them. And I've never done it before, and I will do it forever now. It's been awesome. So I sit down with them one-on-one, and I start by just saying, tell me a little bit about your reading life. And most of them say they used to love to read, but now they're too busy. And then I ask them which books they've read for school they've loved, which ones they've hated, and what they read outside of school.
It's like book therapy.
It is.
Can I come?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's so fun. I've gotten some great book recommendations from them. But some of the books they've liked for school have surprised me. So I think that they do enjoy the classics if they are allowed to kind of explore it and connect to them. If they are just kind of given, here's the book and here's the right answer to what this book is about, that's when they tend to turn off. But a lot of them said that books like To Kill a Mockingbird and Catcher in the Rye, even Of Mice and Men, were relatable to them when they had somebody kind of help them make those connections.
I mean, I reread To Kill a Mockingbird somewhat recently, I think right before Ghost at a Watchman was about to come out, and I loved it. I mean, I know I read it growing up. I don't remember much about it. I don't remember whether I loved it or hated it at that point in time, but I loved it as an adult.
I hope that some of my students will revisit classic lit, whether it's something they read in high school or something they feel like they missed at some point in their lives, because I love the classics. I mean, I probably wouldn't be an English teacher if I didn't. I think one of the things I've shaken off as I've taught more is this idea that there are certain books that every person needs to have read. I just don't think that anymore. I just want people to read.
And also, certain books may impact somebody differently at different times in their life. Like, there are books that we're reading in high school that maybe they would have impacted you differently had you read them as an adult.
Yes, exactly. And I do think that a lot of the classics we try to teach would probably be more well-suited for an adult. They would just enjoy it more.
So what do you think some of those are that you think probably should be taught later in life or read later in life?
Big one for me is My Antonia.
I don't think I read that one.
I've taught it for, I think, 5 years, and it never goes well for me. I think the students can pick up on the fact that I don't really love it, but it's a book that's all about nostalgia and regret and looking back at the choices you've made in your life. And that is just not relatable to a 17-year-old.
No. Oh, no, 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 no. I totally agree with you there. So tell me what some of your favorite contemporary books are that you teach.
So right now I'm teaching The Other Wes Moore. Have you read The Other Wes Moore?
I have not read that one, no.
It's great. It is nonfiction. The author's name is Wes Moore, and it's a memoir about his life. It's very readable, plot-driven nonfiction. So the author was a Rhodes Scholar and a White House Fellow and has this very successful life, and he learns about another man named Wes Moore, who grew up just blocks away from him in Baltimore, who's serving a life sentence in prison. And so he starts to go and interview the other Wes Moore, and he writes this kind of side-by-side story of both of their lives and the circumstances and choices that led each of them to where they are. It's very powerful, but also very much a page turner.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it's really good. I've also taught Homegoing, which I love. The girls loved it. I assign Little Fires Everywhere as one of the summer reading options. They love it.
See, that's a book that would never have been on my summer reading list growing up, but it's so readable. And that is a book that could make someone that's reluctant fall in love with reading.
Exactly. And a lot of them end up picking up her other book after that, which is awesome. This year I'm teaching Circe for the first time.
Ooh, how's that going?
Well, I haven't started it yet, but the planning is fun.
Okay.
I'm teaching it to my sophomores, so I think it's going to be a little bit of a reach for them, but also like a good challenge. It was also on my Women in Lit summer reading list, so I have had students read it, and I had them rate their summer reading books on the first day of class. All the girls who read Circe rated it 4 or 5 stars, so...
Oh, that's so fun. Do you have a compilation of your class's ratings of their summer reading?
I do. Yes, I should send it to you.
Can I see it? I would love to see that.
Yes, absolutely. It's really, really fun. The sad ones are when you get the 1 or 2 stars.
Yes, I know. But you know what? Everybody has different reading tastes, even in high school.
It's true. I always want to say, well, if you hated it, why didn't you pick another book? But then I remember they're teenagers and they devoted 50 pages of reading and they're not going to turn back.
Sure. Oh, I didn't DNF back at that point in my life. Definitely not.
Yes. Yes.
So are there any contemporary books that you would just absolutely love to teach, but you can't for whatever reason?
Yes. So the first one that comes to mind is The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead.
Yes, I just read that.
Oh, it's so good. I feel like he wrote it for English teachers.
So I said in my review, I foresee this being taught in schools for a long time.
Totally. Yes. And the only reason I can't teach that is I'm just not teaching the right classes for it this year. I'm not teaching American literature this year. And I obviously cannot put it in Women in Lit.
So there's future for it.
There's a future for it. I'd also really love to teach Beartown. It's so good. It's so readable.
Last couple questions before we get on to your recommendations. Can you share a couple classics that you are just a diehard lover of and you think should always be taught in classrooms?
Yes, absolutely. Number one, Beloved by Toni Morrison.
Yes.
Have you read Beloved?
I have not, but I know that she's in the media right now, unfortunately.
Yes. Yes.
I know. It's so sad. I don't know that I have read any Toni Morrison, actually. It's on my list of classics to go back and try.
This is one of the reasons why I think it should be kept in classrooms. Is her books are masterpieces. They're also really hard. And you're not often in the right mood to pick up a Toni Morrison book to read for pleasure.
And do you mean hard in the sense of language or hard in the sense of subject matter?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
The new subject matter is hard. I wasn't sure about her writing style.
Yes. Her language is fairly straightforward, but her narrative style is often really complicated. Like you maybe don't quite know which character's mind you're in at certain times. So it's helpful, I think, to have discussions about it, both because of the subject matter and the language. So that's the number one for me. I love teaching it. The girls, even when they don't necessarily like the book, they get to the end and they're so impressed with her creativity and her craft, and they recognize it for a masterpiece, which is rare for the books that we teach. So,
and if somebody's going to start Toni Morrison, is Beloved the best place to start? I know her books are very intertwined.
Yes. Beloved is my favorite, but it's also, I think, because I've read it the most. I read it every time I teach it. The Bluest Eye is really good, and Sula.
So those are the two I heard. I think it was on the Book Riot podcast when Toni Morrison passed away recently. I feel like Sula and The Bluest Eye were the two that Jeff O'Neill and Rebecca Shinsky were saying to start with as well.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Not her best known. So that's good to know.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to let me know if you pick up one of them.
Now I need to find the time to read some backlist.
I know. That's the hard part.
It is hard.
Other than Beloved, I love teaching The Great Gatsby.
I do love that one.
Yeah. And the students, they know about it. They have it in their cultural consciousness. So they get really excited about it. It's glitzy. It's glamorous. they love watching the movie afterwards, which is so fun. And I love that the symbolism in the book is very accessible. And so the students get really into it. Like, they've identified what they think all of these symbols mean, and they're reading at this level of depth that maybe they don't get to in other books. So that's really fun to see.
And I also feel like The Great Gatsby was the original wealthy people behaving badly book, which is the category of books I still enjoy immensely.
Yes, me too. I hadn't really traced it back to that one, but you're so right. And the girls, I mean, Gossip Girl, they're obsessed with. So if you can tie it to Gossip Girl, then they're 100% in.
That's awesome. I love it.
I think the only other category of book that I think should be included is classic women's literature. So Jane Eyre or Pride and Prejudice. I think it's important for boys and girls to see that women were writing classic literature as well, and that it's equally as important.
And can you share a few classics that you wish you could just scratch from the curriculum, never to be seen again?
Yes. Well, and I have successfully scratched some of these.
So. Oh, congratulations. Tell me the ones you've scratched.
Beowulf.
Oh, yes. That was terrible.
I agree. Canterbury Tales.
Oh, again, yeah. We'll get to that more later in the episode. I have something planned for that. So put a pin in Canterbury Tales.
Okay. Great Expectations. Dickens is another one I think is better for when you're older.
Yeah, I did read Great Expectations as an adult. It was a while ago, so I don't remember much. But I feel like I liked it, but it's also a book that I would never read now because it's just so long and so dense.
So long, so dense. And it's funny, but it's hard to get a teenager to see the humor. So I think that's better left for later. The Scarlet Letter.
Oh, interesting. Why The Scarlet Letter?
So I feel like that is a good opportunity, removing The Scarlet Letter in favor of a book like Jane Eyre. Not that they have similar writing styles or anything like that, but I think people often point to The Scarlet Letter as a book with a female protagonist, but it's written by a man. And so I think it's a good opportunity to kind of sub something out for a female writer. And then 1984. And that one's kind of controversial. Some people love 1984.
Yeah, and I feel like it's sort of had a resurgence.
It has, for good reason, but that's not really, I can't really talk politics too much with students.
Nah, I don't like to do that on the show. That's a no-win situation.
Yeah, so, and they read so much dystopian literature. I thought they would enjoy seeing the root of dystopian literature, but they don't. And I think they get most of the same ideas and themes from the books that they're reading for fun.
Fair enough. Let's get into your recommendations. So Sarah is going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she does not love, and one new release that she's excited about. So tell me about the first old book you love.
So the first old book I love is Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. Have you read this one?
It's on my never-ending backlist TBR, which I end up reading like four per year. But so many people have told me that this is one that has to stay on the TBR.
Absolutely. I'm going to add to that.
And it's pretty short, right?
It is short. So it's kind of hard to summarize this one without giving too much away, but basically it's three close friends and they're at this boarding school in England and it follows them from childhood to adulthood. And you can tell that there's something weird going on at the school and with these students. The teachers always say that these kids are really special, but you don't quite know what that means. And as he reveals what that means, he also shows the characters growing up and falling in love and out of love. It's a really beautiful story. The twist, I kind of hate using that word, twist, because it sounds more thrillery, but the reveal is so mind-blowing. You just want to go back and reread the whole thing to see the clues he left along the way. I love books like that.
I do too. You want to go back now, knowing what you know now, let's go read it with a different lens.
Exactly. That's one of my favorite types of books. And this book just, it makes you think about what makes us human. And oh, I love it.
Have you put this on your summer reading list for your students?
I have. To mixed results.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes, it's interesting. So one of the other teachers who's a really close friend of mine, she hates teaching this book. So we've agreed to take it off the list. But some of the students love it. I think it maybe takes them a little bit longer to pick up on what's really going on than it would for an adult reader. And so I think they feel maybe a little betrayed when they get to the end instead of...
Oh, now you're really making me want to read this.
Okay, good.
Well, and it's a campus novel too.
Yes.
Which I love.
Me too. Especially British ones. I don't know why.
So that was Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. And tell me about the second old book you love.
The second one is Salvage the Bones by Jesmyne Ward.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm really excited to talk about this one with you. I read this in grad school, actually. And it was for a course called Class Fictions. And so it was all about the way class is represented in literature, which was an awesome lens to look at this book through. The main character is Esh. Esh is 14 years old and she's pregnant. And it follows her in, I think, maybe the 8 days leading up to Hurricane Katrina. She lives in New Orleans with her family, which mostly consists of brothers and her father. Her mother is not in the picture. And so she's kind of coming to grips with the fact that she's going to become a mother soon while also navigating 14-year-old high school stuff. I love this book because I love Esh. I think Ward gives her a really rich interior life. I like how she's looking for models of what motherhood could be. And the only examples she really has, she has her brother's dog, China, who's giving birth to puppies. And she has all of these mythological women that she's studying in school, like Medea and Hera. And so she's thinking about motherhood in these kind of two extreme ways. It's a tough book, but I felt like I learned so much. It made me want to read more about the intersection of race and class. And I just love Jesmyne Ward's writing.
And that won the National Book Award that year as well. Did you read Sing, Unburied, Sing also?
I did.
And did you feel the same way about that one?
Yes. I think I prefer Salvage the Bones, maybe because I read it first. That sometimes happens to me. But I think that her writing is exquisite in any of her books. And the story in Sing, Unburied, Sing is really interesting as well, with kind of the ghost element.
See, that didn't work for me, the ghost. I don't love the supernatural. It just, I like my stories sort of firmly rooted in reality. And it was Robert, right?
Yes.
So that part of Sing, Unburied, Sing, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And that kind of bugged me.
Did you finish that one or no?
I did. I finished Sing, Unburied, Sing, and I appreciated her writing was just so beautiful. And I loved, I think it was the grandfather character. It's been a while since I read it. I loved him. But overall, it was a book that I felt like I could see that it was so exquisitely done, but I didn't love reading it. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. That might be one of the reasons I've fallen in love with her writing is that I started out reading it in a class where I got to discuss it and read academic work alongside it. You did not finish Salvage the Bones, correct?
No, I did not. I made it about halfway through and I went back to look at my thoughts about it before recording. Apparently, I didn't write those down. All I said was I was kind of bored.
It is a slow build. She does it to kind of like mimic the hurricane feel. So it's this slow build and then all of a sudden everything happens.
But the premise of Salvage the Bones on paper sounds like something that's up my alley. I love the build up to Hurricane Katrina. I love Esh being 14 and needing a mother figure. I love all of those elements on paper. I guess saying on paper when you're talking about a book is probably not how I mean for it to sound, right?
I know what you mean. It makes sense to me.
Yeah. It's like when you're talking about a guy, oh, he's great on paper, except when you're talking about a book, that doesn't really hold true. So that was Salvage the Bones by Jesmyne Ward. And I am absolutely in the minority on Jesmyne Ward. I realize that.
Have you read her nonfiction?
I have not read Men We Reaped yet. No, and I would like to. So tell me about the first new book you love.
The first new one I love is Nama by Sarah Blake. This is a retelling of the Noah's Ark story from the perspective of Noah's wife. And that alone sold me. I love retellings of myths, legends, histories, classics, anything.
I'm not a big retellings person, but I do love wife perspective books.
Yes, yes.
Like a book about a really famous man, but it's from the wife's perspective. And it sounds and looks totally different.
Yes. And this book is totally different. I definitely wouldn't recommend it to every reader.
What type would you recommend it to?
I would recommend it, first of all, if you love retellings, but more if you love magical realism. There's a lot of magical realism here. It's very imaginative. There's a lot of relationship dynamic stuff, but within the confines of this arc. So there aren't a lot of people there, and how they get so frustrated with each other, but still love each other. I love that kind of commentary. The book it reminded me of the most was Oryx and Crake by Margaret Atwood.
Yes, I haven't read it, but it's on my list.
It's really weird. And this book, Nama, is really weird.
Really weird, too.
Really weird. Just a lot of scenes where you're like, I have no idea what's going on here. But then you get to the end of the scene or the book, and you realize what she's doing with this commentary on faith and relationships. And I'm not a person who reads a lot about faith, so don't let that scare you off if that word is not in your typical vocabulary. But I loved her take on faith in humanity and what that looks like for Nama versus Noah. And they have very different perspectives on the flood and whether it was a good thing or not. And it's really lovely.
I had not heard of this book before you sent it to me, but it sounds super interesting. Although the magical realism does scare me a little bit, because that, as I said earlier, I like my books firmly rooted in reality.
Yes, I won't sugarcoat it for you. There's a lot of magical realism.
Maybe not the best for me then.
Yes, it's also very much rated R.
That doesn't bother me. So that was Nama by Sarah Blake, and that came out in April. And I guess you won't be recommending that to your students since it's rated R.
I will not. No, definitely not.
Although, I mean, granted, they're in high school, and let's face it, I am sure they're seeing R-rated stuff all over the place. But
not from my hands, though.
No, exactly. What is your second new book you love?
It's Trick Mirror by Gia Tolentino. You hadn't read this one, correct?
I have not read it, but I've seen it around on Instagram, and it sounds interesting. I like essay collections, especially on audio.
Me too. I listened to it on audio as well. So it's good on audio. She narrated it herself. It's a collection of essays, as you said. I also love collections of essays. There are a lot of different subjects in this book, but it primarily looks at identity in the contemporary world. So how much of our contemporary society is focused on the self, but what that really means for how we shape our own identities and morality and worldviews, etc. So, for example, she has an essay on the internet and how the internet has evolved from being more about community to being more about the self. She has a great essay that I just cannot stop thinking about how women are taught to optimize their time. So make sure that every minute of the day counts and that we're constantly bettering ourselves and improving ourselves. And she uses Sweetgreen, the salad chain, and Pure Bar Class as her big examples. And I love both of those things. And so I was like dying, laughing, and also really enjoying the commentary from that.
This sounds like a book that your students might find value in, do you think?
Oh, yes. I'm hoping to excerpt some of it from them. She has a whole essay about female heroines in literature. So from like Anne Shirley and The Little Princess and all of those like childhood classics that we read. And she has great, great commentary on how we as women maybe form our identities based on these books. The book is really, really funny, but also still poignant, and it's critical in a thoughtful and kind way. I feel like I'm not selling it as well as I want to, but the writing is spectacular and the commentary is amazing.
This is going on my audiobook list for sure.
Good. Yes, it's great on audio. And I often get to nonfiction on audio.
All right. So that was Trick Mirror by Gia Tolentino. And that came out in April. Tell me about the book you do not love.
The book I didn't love was The Death of Mrs. Westaway by Ruth Ware. Have you read this one?
I have not read this one. I actually don't think I've read any Ruth Ware before, but I feel like another book she wrote is really controversial. People were like, I wanted to throw it across the room at the end.
Yes, that's kind of how I felt with this one.
That would be In a Dark, Dark Wood, by the way, what I'm talking about.
Okay, I haven't read that one. I've read one other of hers, The Lying Game. I was excited about The Death of Mrs. Westaway. I love anything set in like a big, creepy British manor. And this book is that. And so I had high hopes for this being a thriller that I would really enjoy. But I really, what I hate, particularly in thrillers, but really in all of my books, is when the book is very contrived and I can kind of see the author's hand manipulating me and manipulating the characters. I just felt like Ruth Ware was hiding things from me that didn't make sense for them to be hidden, like a lot of miscommunications or people not noticing things that they should notice. And so then the twist at the end felt both obvious to me and also out of nowhere, which is kind of the worst combination you can have in a thriller.
Yes. The last thing you just said about the twist being out of nowhere is what drives me crazy about thrillers.
And I feel like I've been chasing this Gone Girl high for years.
Haven't we all?
And that just nothing comes close.
No. And if you were to ask me what my all-time best plot twist was, it's Gone Girl.
Yeah. Nothing can live up to that now.
No, I never saw it coming. But when it came, it made complete sense.
Exactly. That's what I love. This was the opposite of that. It made no sense. And I saw it coming.
Yeah. You got the worst of both worlds.
Yes.
So that was The Death of Mrs. Westaway by Ruth Ware. And I think when it came out, I was in my anti-thriller phase where I'd been burned out too many times. So I didn't even think about picking it up. But I did hear from people that love her that they didn't love this one quite as much.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll give her another try at some point.
Did you read The Woman in Cabin 10?
I did not.
Okay. That's, I feel like for my listeners, the book you might have heard of the most recently. By her.
Yes. I've seen that one around a lot. So maybe I should give it a shot.
I haven't read that either. Again, in my anti-thriller phase.
Totally understand. I think I'm there now.
So tell me about the new release you're excited about.
It's called In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. She's the author of Her Body and Other Parties, which is a short story collection that came out a couple of years ago. This is her memoir. And it's a memoir about an abusive relationship she was in. So it sounds pretty dark.
And same-sex relationship too.
Yes, exactly. Which is a subject and story I've read zero about. So that's one of the things that caught my eye about this.
Actually, no. One other place I've read it in fiction, A Little Life.
Yes, you're right. I also read A Little Life. That was two men.
Yes, this is two women.
Yes. Oh, A Little Life. But we can talk about that another time.
We could do a whole episode on that one.
For sure. But first of all, the Goodreads reviews, the early reviews on this book are outstanding.
They're outrageously high.
I know.
4.78 rating on Goodreads.
I know. I feel like that has got to be a little bit skewed for some reason, but that still makes me very excited.
And Roxane Gay gave it 5 stars too.
Exactly. Anything Roxane Gay recommends, I will pick up. I love her. I actually didn't finish Her Body and Other Parties because I just don't get caught up in short story collections. I just have a really hard time finishing them.
A lot of people have a hard time with them.
I love individual short stories. I just rarely finish a full collection. But I loved her writing. And so I'm excited to read her writing in a genre that I enjoy a little bit more as a memoir. I love memoirs.
And that's coming out on November 9th. Just in time for Nonfiction November, everybody.
Perfect.
Yes. And that was In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. Okay. Are you ready to play Rate It?
Yes. I'm so excited.
All right. So I like to end every episode with a lightning round game where I throw out 5 bookish things. And that could be anything book related. Sometimes I stretch that definition. And you rate it either 1 or 5 stars, just like you would rate a book, except for you cannot use 2, 3, or 4 stars. So this is a love-hate game. Number one, teaching a required book that you hate.
1 star.
Do you tell your students that you hate it?
No. But they can tell.
Do they call you out on it?
They often do afterwards. We kind of play the game together where we're like, okay, we're all in this together. We're not going to trash talk this book. And then once the unit's over, then we feel a little bit more comfortable.
All right. Number two, teaching the Canterbury Tales.
1 star.
Tell me why.
I hate the Canterbury Tales so much and I don't understand why we read it.
What have you been told is the reason that students everywhere have to read the Canterbury Tales? Like, what is the party line on this?
I think the party line is just that it's important to read something from the Middle English era.
Oh, Middle English, God.
Yes. And that shows in the progression of English literature. But I'll tell you what, when I'm teaching contemporary or even Victorian books, I am not tying them back to the Canterbury Tales. I'm not saying, like, see, Charlotte Bronte couldn't have written this if she hadn't read the Canterbury Tales. No. And I took a class on the Canterbury Tales in undergrad, and my professor, she spoke Middle English fluently, which I didn't know was a thing.
So humans do that. There are humans out there. Wow.
Yes. And she actually made me love the Canterbury Tales for those few weeks that I was in class.
Okay. Well, that's great.
But I have not carried that love with me forever, and I do not instill it in my students.
Growing up in high school, I think it was sophomore year, maybe, we had to individually memorize the prologue of the Canterbury Tales and stand up and recite it in class.
My husband had to do that too.
Why? Why is that an assignment? What do we get out of that is what I want to know.
I don't know, but do you still remember it?
So I have a friend who has a memory like a steel trap. She can literally remember what I wore to like 10th grade homecoming dance.
Oh my gosh. So she remembers.
Yeah. And we sat around a table at her 40th birthday party, and she recited every single one of our childhood phone numbers.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
And our wedding anniversaries.
What? That's incredible.
Yeah. I don't know where the information goes in her brain, but whatever. She can still recite the prologue start to finish. I remember Juan that April, and then I forgot. Yeah, I wholeheartedly give that a one, too. Number three, the classics. And what I mean by that is your general opinion of them in your externally from class reading life.
Five. I love the classics. And I think maybe I have a little bit of a broader definition of what classics are. But even thinking about a lot of the books that the general public can agree is a classic, there are so many that I love and that I reread fairly regularly. As we've kind of started this episode talking about, I just hope that my students end up loving reading so that maybe they'll pick up and love those classics when they're ready for them. So fully support the classics and even introducing them to young people. Just don't think that that's the only thing we should be doing.
I'm with you. Number four, parents giving their opinions on the books that you choose to teach.
Oof.
And does that happen to you?
Yes, it happens. I've been burned by a bad experience recently, so I'm going to say one star, but I'm going to give a caveat. I actually have a lot of parents who like to read some of the books alongside their students, and that is awesome. It's wonderful. I love it when parents want to share in that experience with their students. I've had a lot of parents do that with my Women in Lit summer reading, a lot of moms and daughters reading Little Fires Everywhere together, which I think is amazing. I love that.
Maybe that will be my catalyst to revisit some classics.
Yes, exactly.
My children are too young right now. They're 6 and 8, but they'll get there eventually.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's awesome. But when a parent, which can happen, insists that their kids should be reading exactly the same books that they read in high school, that can be frustrating. And I understand why. Like, if it was important to them, they assume it's going to be important to their child, but that's a tough conversation to navigate.
Sure. I imagine that is incredibly tough.
Yes.
Number five, students following you on Instagram.
5 stars. I love it.
And do they comment on your post?
Sometimes they comment. Sometimes they enter my giveaways, which I love.
Oh, that's fun. Have you ever had one win a giveaway?
Not yet, but there's always hope. It's so fun. And sometimes they will message me and ask for book recommendations there, or they'll ask, could you do a post about back to school books or things like that? And I love their input and I love modeling for them how much I love reading, but I really love their involvement on my account. I love chatting with them about books there.
And probably an endless source of blog post ideas too.
Yes, absolutely. I'm very grateful to have their little minds to mine.
Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I love talking with a teacher who cares so deeply about students loving reading, no matter what they're reading, whether they're reading the good books that they're being taught in the classroom or whether they're reading outside trash, which is how I got into reading books.
Yes, me too. Me too. And we didn't really talk about this, but I didn't read my assigned reading in high school.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh, true confession.
True confession from an English teacher.
Did you read the Cliff Notes?
sometimes I would read the Cliff Notes. I think I got good at finding a couple of quotes that I could discuss without having read the whole book. Those really important grad school skills that served me well later.
This should have been in the earlier part of the discussion, but whatever. How did you end up an English major and you didn't read your high school English assigned books? Like, what point did you change your mind?
So I didn't think I wanted to be an English major. And so when I signed up for my freshman year courses, I signed up for zero English classes in college. I went to a school with a weird system where we took one class at a time for 3.5 weeks. So after my first two blocks, so two classes, I really missed reading and I missed English class and I missed discussing books. And so I redid my whole schedule and signed up for a ton of English classes. So it actually took stepping away and saying, okay, now I don't have to take English classes for me to realize that I really wanted to take English classes. I read a ton outside of school in high school. I was just one of those kids who once you told me that I had to read something, I didn't want to read it anymore.
I was the same as you. I was reading all kinds of stuff outside of the classroom, none of which was appropriate for the classroom.
Yes.
And I did do my high school reading because I was just a very type A, check the box kind of person. But I didn't love a lot of those books, nor do I remember much about them now.
Right. I know, which I think is another argument against the whole, these are the books everyone must read and remember, because we don't really remember them.
So I'm going to try to close this out again. I'm glad we talked about that. That was interesting. And tell everybody where they can find you online before we go.
I am on Instagram at Fiction Matters, and my blog is fictionmattersbooks.com.
Next week, we have another mini episode with Sarah Bowl, who formerly hosted a podcast called Everyday Etiquette. We will not be talking about etiquette in our episode. Talk to you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. Find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. Happy reading!